It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump is denouncing the Syrian regime's chemical weapons attack as an affront to humanity and warned it would not be tolerated. Speaking alongside Jordan's King Abdullah at the White House at a news conference Wednesday, Trump said the Syrian chemical attack in Idlib province crossed the so-called red line, a reference to the threshold by the Obama administration.
When you kill innocent children, innocent babies, little babies, with a chemical gas that is so lethal, people were shocked to hear what gas it was. That crosses many, many lines, beyond the red line, many, many lines.
The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting Wednesday to discuss the chemical weapons attack in Syria that killed scores of people. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, called for the Security Council to take the necessary measures to ensure the officials, perpetrators, and supporters are held accountable.
When the United Nations consistently fails in its duty to act collectively, there are times in the life of states that we are compelled to take our own action.
U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley. President Trump has removed his chief political strategist, Stephen Bannon, from the National Security Council. The New York Times reporting late Wednesday, a White House official said Bannon resisted the move, even threatening at one point to quit if it went forward. Some lawmakers and industry insiders had said it was inappropriate for Bannon to serve on the high-level White House panel that discusses pressing national security concerns. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. President Trump is set to host a two-day summit with Chinese President Xi Jinping at his Florida resort beginning Thursday, and North Korea's latest ballistic missile test will likely be part of the discussion. Wednesday's launch came after Trump threatened that the United States is prepared to go it alone to counter the North's nuclear threat if China does not step in. Japan Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says he spoke with Trump by phone, and the U.S. leader agreed that North Korea's actions are dangerous and threatens Japan's national security. Abe said he will be watching closely to see how China reacts to the North Korea issue. He said Trump gave reassuring words that every option is on the table. Pyongyang's ballistic missile tests are in violation of the UN Security Council's resolutions, but the North has defied the ban as an infringement of its sovereign rights to self-defense and pursuit of space exploration. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will be traveling to Russia after attending the G7 foreign ministers meeting in Italy next week. The State Department announced Tillerson will meet with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, to discuss Ukraine, counterterrorism efforts, and bilateral relations. The Russian Foreign Ministry confirmed the trip. Germany is threatening to slap social media companies with huge fines if they do not act quickly enough to remove hate speech from their websites. Chancellor Angela Merkel's cabinet on Wednesday approved a measure that would fine websites like Facebook and Twitter up to $55 million if they do not, or do enough, rather, to censor comments that violate German speech law. Germany outright bans any speech that overtly promotes racism or insults a certain segment of the population. The draft legislation will require social media companies to remove any illegal speech within 24 hours of it being flagged by users. As the search continues for victims of Colombia's deadly landslides, authorities on Thursday investigated who is to blame for the devastation that has now claimed more than 300 lives. The national controller ordered a probe to determine whether authorities in the town of Mocoa correctly enforce building codes and plan adequately for natural disasters. Colombian media reports say Mayor Jose Antonio Castro is among current and former officials facing a separate investigation by prosecutors. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Joseph Kabila is expected to name a long-awaited new prime minister tomorrow, but the opposition will not give him what he needs.
We are saying to Mr. Kabila that the first thing we have to do is to sign the arrangement particulier. We have to sign that document so we can implement the accord. So we will not give any list to Mr. Kabila.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. AU mediator and former South African President Thabo Mbeki is expected in Khartoum today for a follow-up on the roadmap agreement. The U.S. Congress holds hearing on Sudan's sanctions, and the Ugandan government says it is ready to hold talks with opposition leader Kizza Besigye.
The government of Uganda, as usual, is open to dialogue with whomsoever we have differences. There is nothing specific about discussion between President Museveni and Mr. Besigye.
Ofwono Opondo is the director of the Uganda Media Center. Burundi actors are exploring more opportunities in movie making, and a new study says improved sleep may help the elderly ward off diseases. The stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A leading member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo has once again said the group will not accept President Joseph Kabila's demand for a list of names for prime minister. This comes after Mr. Kabila announced on Wednesday that he will appoint a new prime minister by this Friday, but only if the opposition can give him the names of candidates. A December 31st, 2016 agreement brokered by the Catholic Bishops Conference called for a national unity government headed by a new prime minister and followed by elections at the end of 2017. In a speech to parliament, the president said his government is willing to have the election, but without foreign interference. Martin Fayulu, a senior member of the Rassemblement, says the agreement gives the opposition the power to appoint the new prime minister.
The Rassemblement is asking Mr. Kabila why he still continues to insist on the list. The accord doesn't say that we need a list. We need a name because the Rassemblement is one, is unique, and we don't think that there is many other Rassemblements. We are saying to Mr. Kabila that the first thing we have to do is to sign the arrangement particulier. We have to sign that document so we can implement the accord. So we will not give any list to Mr. Kabila.
So can it be said that the opposition, the Rassemblement, is delaying the process?
The Rassemblement is not delaying anything. The Rassemblement wants Mr. Kabila to stay in the accord. The accord is only the source of the power today in Congo. Mr. Kabila has to stay on the accord. And to implement the accord, we have first to sign the arrangement particulier. There is no way we can give any list. We have the name of the prime minister we have presented is known, clearly known, and Mr. Kabila knows it. But why he wants us to give a list? Why he wants to divide the Rassemblement?
The president is insisting on the list because the information minister says that the president has a constitutional responsibility to name the prime minister.
The accord says that the Rassemblement has to present the name of the prime minister and the president has to appoint him. There is nothing else.
The president said that it's the opposition, the Rassemblement, that is to be blamed for the delay because of what he called squabbles, disagreement among you, the opposition.
The opposition cannot be blamed. We have to blame Mr. Kabila, who doesn't want the accord, because Mr. Kabila is playing a game. Why he doesn't want to follow what is written in the accord? In the accord, nowhere it stated that we have to give a list of candidates.
Mr. Kabila has said that he's willing for the election to take place, but also he suggests that there is some foreign interference.
No, there is nobody here in Congo who was supported by the French government. But Mr. Kabila, if he knows or he masters what he's saying, today we are having enrollment to prepare the electoral register. But for that, the foreign countries through MONUSCO, they are helping. How can we have election in this country without any help from international community? But Mr. Kabila wants to ignore that new resolution of the Security Council.
Do you suppose that the president is talking about foreign interference because he does not want MONUSCO to be in the country during the election?
Yes, Mr. Kabila wants to do election without the outside eyes because, as usual, he wants again to maneuver. He wants to play again. We want to have election which is not transparent. But we think that there is no way we can have election without the observers, without the international community putting money, helping us with aircraft, and so on and so forth.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Ugandan government says it is prepared to hold talks with opposition parties who share different policy positions about the prospects of the country's future. Officials and several stakeholders, including religious groups, have called on the government to hold talks with the opposition parties. This after main opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye from the Forum for Democratic Change Party signaled his readiness to engage in talks with President Yoweri Museveni. Ofwando Opondo, the director of the Uganda Media Center, tells viewers Peter Clarty that the victory of President Yoweri Museveni in the last election is indisputable, since he says it has been signed, sealed, and delivered by the highest court of the land.
Sadly, what is being misrepresented is that the dialogue is about presidential election results to audit. That is not true, because as far as government is concerned, presidential election results were concluded, sealed by the decision of the Supreme Court. Any directives from the Supreme Court will only be for the future. However, the government of Uganda, as usual, is open to dialogue with whomsoever we have differences. There is nothing specific about discussion between President Museveni and Mr. Besigye. Mr. Besigye is the one who has been making rounds for the last 3 months to make it appear as if President Museveni's government is desperate, has been isolated by the international community, and is on its knees begging him for talks, which is not true. It is something being generated by Mr. Besigye.
You initially said some stakeholders in Uganda are trying to encourage dialogue between the president or the government and the opposition. What parameters will the dialogue be centered on?
Well, the Interreligious Council, for example, the Elders Forum, for example, the Women's Forum have approached the government to have dialogue with opposition parties because they think there's so much divisiveness in the country and only dialogue can help ameliorate. There are things that they have proposed. For example, constitutional reforms, electoral reforms. Can we make the rules governing our elections more transparent, more equitable? Resources at the disposal of the incumbent while he's running for office. Those are some of the parameters that they have suggested. Consequence to that, the government has proposed a constitutional review commission, which we hope should be able to go around the country, solicit deeper views about constitutional and electoral reforms, from which then the government can publish a government white paper and also constitutional amendment bills to be presented and debated by parliament. That is really the structure the government is looking at for the moment. However, if there is any other supportive platform, that should really reinforce the government's efforts rather than displacing it or being a replacement.
There are suggestions that President Museveni is pushing this constitutional review to remove age limits so that will enable him run in perpetuity. Is the government mooting or supporting the idea to remove age limits from the constitution to allow President Museveni to run or seek re-election after the age limit set by the constitution?
I have not seen a document to that effect, and I believe doesn't exist at all. I have not heard any formal statement from the president supporting that position. However, once we go for a constitutional review. You cannot prevent a Ugandan out there to make a proposal. And assuming those Ugandans are a substantial number, 30%, for example, or 20%, at that point, it would be something perhaps that would be included for debate. We would then perhaps prevail on Parliament or implore members of Parliament to reject such a proposal. And we would really want Ugandans to put more pressure on members of Parliament who are going to make the ultimate decision. Whichever proposal comes, to weigh them, logically consider them, and take those that are taking Uganda forward and reject those that are serving immediate personal interests, perhaps of the president or any leader.
Ofwando Opondo is the director of the Uganda Media Center. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, April 6th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. African Union chief mediator and former South African President Thabo Mbeki is expected in Khartoum today for a follow-up on the roadmap agreement signed between President Omar al-Bashir's government and the opposition. Ahead of Mr. Mbeki's arrival, the leader of the opposition National Umar Party, Al-Sadiq al-Mardi, signaled to Mr. Mbeki to listen to all parties. Mariam al-Sadiq al-Mardi is the vice president of the National Umar Party.
This visit of President Mbeki has been expected for more than 2 months now. It has been postponed for several times. Actually, as you know, Mr. Mbeki has been tackling many issues in Sudan since 2007. For this time, the government of Sudan is trying to say President Mbeki has got nothing to do in Sudan because already they have achieved a national dialogue and they are going ahead to appoint a government to implement the outcome of their dialogue. So we still believe the roadmap is a valid approach to reach peace and stability in Sudan. And that's why we believe what is needed now by President Mbeki is to listen to all the stakeholders inside Sudan and outside Sudan as well, to determine the next step vis-a-vis how to inactivate this roadmap.
Madam, I mentioned earlier the Troika. The Troika has asked the Sudanese government to create an environment that is conducive, say, to freedom of expression and political participation. Wednesday, we learned of the arrest of three opposition figures. What do you make of that? Do you think now that there is an environment for freedom of expression and political participation in Sudan?
Never been. Actually, it's coming down from bad to worse. And yes, too, as you mentioned, the Malta has been calling, the EU has been calling, the AU has been calling, but this government has never been responding to any calling from. That's why we are having continuous violations of human rights. We are getting, as politicians or human rights activists, we are being detained all the time without having accusations. We get our passport confiscated and we are denied to get out of the country without any explanation. Today, three heads of three political parties, along with other clients, altogether they are like seven people, have been detained and taken to unknown destinations because they have been holding a peaceful stand, demanding to release the political detainees. And such activities by this government and by this is recurrent on regular basis. Okay, bye.
Mariam al-Sadiq al-Mardi is the vice president of the National Umar Party of Sudan. She was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. U.S. members of Congress asked panelists at a hearing on sanctions against Sudan this week to measure the country's progress on human rights since President Barack Obama temporarily eased sanctions in January. As INBO reports, the panelists have different views on whether easing sanctions on Sudan was the right thing to do.
While one panelist at yesterday's congressional hearing said the easing of sanctions undermines U.S. foreign policy objectives, another said the sanctions have so far been ineffective in pressuring the Sudanese government to respect the human rights of its citizens. Omar Ismail, a senior advisor with the Enough Project, says President Barack Obama's move to ease sanctions in January was a deeply flawed policy decision in both design and execution.
It undermines U.S. foreign policy objectives. It gives away U.S. leverage for nothing beyond a potential short-term counterterrorism gain. It does nothing to address the structural issues in Sudan. The human rights protections and democracy demands of the Sudanese people were not even part of the plan. War, repression, human rights violations, and dictatorship have continued in the months since the Sudanese government's supposed positive actions that justify the sanctions easing first began.
Ken Isaacs, Vice President of Programs and Government Relations for Samaritan's Purse, a non-denominational evangelical Christian international relief organization, says sanctions in Sudan have failed to yield their intended result and says it's time the U.S. consider lifting broad trade sanctions.
We cannot move forward with lifting sanctions, however, unless we are willing to candidly look at past actions and current challenges. To help our Sudanese friends, we need a brief, candid review of how we got to where we are now.
Isaac says trade sanctions hurt the most vulnerable people by restricting development in medical care, transportation, and education, and at the same time are ineffective in convincing governments to change their behavior.
If Congress and the new administration desire an end to Sudan's destabilizing pattern of conflict and displacement, U.S. sanctions going forward should focus on strategies that provides unimpeded humanitarian access to all areas in and out of their control, delivers an end of hostilities along with peace negotiations in Darfur and the two areas by allowing the simultaneous participation of all parties.
Isaac says it should also include a political process whereby the root causes of conflict can be addressed. President Obama's executive order makes reference to counterterrorism priorities, but does not provide guidance on how to measure progress on human rights, according to Jahan Henry, who is a senior researcher for the Human Rights Watch. Henry says it's important for the United States to include a human rights benchmark and to demand the country respect the basic human rights of its people. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Burundian actors are exploring more opportunities in movie making. This comes after One Entertainment Group has released the first ever Burundian action-packed movie. Moses Havyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
This is not a Chinese or an American movie, but the first ever action-packed movie made by a group of Burundian youths under a Brave Entertainment. In Burundi, most of the local movies and actors have been mostly known of producing comedy, romance, or love story movies. But now, Burundian youths are trying to change the routine by producing horror and action-packed movies. Arthur Banshayeko is a 27-year-old Burundian and the director of the movie called The Thunderbolt.
I started in 2005 when I was still at secondary school. Acting on stage in theater, but I acted in my first movie in 2013. I met the right people to work with. I worked with different schools of Kung Fu in Burundi. I met Kung Fu students and we worked together.
The movie is about the two orphans who inherited their parents' property at a very young age and had to be fostered by the family friends, who later wanted to turn around and take the wealth away from them. Producing an action-packed movie, especially in developed countries, needs millions of dollars. But this is not what Arthur thinks.
It costs around $5,000, without counting how much you put in it or how much I put. It is something we did without considering how much we get back.
That sounds not business-friendly, as the matter of fact that Burundi artists and movie producers have for decades struggled to recuperate their funds they invested in movie or music. Copyright infringement is a common practice in Burundi and which has continued to frustrate entertainment in the country. Ndaize Nadine is the director of Burundian Copyrights Office. She says that what they are doing is to make sure that the artists and producers get what they deserve, and that many artists don't come to register their work regardless being free of charge. As Burundi is relatively recovering from the violence that erupted in 2015, after the incumbent President vied for a controversial third term in the office that opposition said was unconstitutional. Youth unemployment has since then hit 70%, but some are now turning to new initiatives to make both ends meet. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Scientists are investigating poor quality of sleep as the source for many diseases of aging, including heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's. They are working on ways to improve the amount of restful sleep that elderly people get, which researchers believe could foster much healthier lives. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Humans spend approximately one-third of their lives asleep. In an ideal world, the time spent sleeping is restful, helping to refresh both alertness and memory. As we age, though, experts say the quality and quantity of sleep becomes poor and fragmented because the neurons and brain circuits that regulate sleep slowly degrade. It's a downhill process that they say begins in a person's 30s. By the time someone is in their 50s, sleep scientists say the average person has lost 50% of their capacity for restful sleep and has trouble falling asleep and staying asleep overnight. From middle age on, sleep specialists say the problems with restful sleep only get worse. Matthew Walker, a professor of neuroscience and psychology at University of California at Berkeley, is director of the school's Sleep and Neuroimaging Lab. He says dream state or rapid eye movement sleep, known as REM sleep, remains mostly intact as we age. What tends to fall off is non-REM sleep, the deep sleep that leaves people feeling refreshed in the morning. As people age, their risk of developing heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's disease rises. Those conditions are commonly believed to interfere with sleep. But Walker thinks the problem may be the other way around.
Or at least it's a two-way street, I think. And maybe the traffic is flowing more so in one direction. In other words, I think sleep disruption is a novel, underappreciated factor that is contributing to aging and dementia as we get older.
In a meta-analysis, Walker and colleagues reviewed data on 2 million people in a study reported in the journal Neuron. When they looked at electrical patterns of sleep in sleep-deprived adults, they found slow waves and so-called sleep spindles, or bursts of brain activity, which disrupt non-REM sleep. They also found chemical markers in spades, as one researcher put it, in people deprived of restful non-REM sleep. Walker says virtually all body systems are affected by a lack of sleep, including the cardiovascular and metabolic systems, which may help explain why people whose sleep is fragmented are more likely to develop heart disease and diabetes. In the meantime, he says, there are things people can do to improve their quality of sleep. They include exercising, avoiding work on computers and tablet devices before bed that make it harder to fall asleep, and sleeping in a cool room, which also seems to ease people into the very necessary and restful part of their day. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Thursday, April 6 edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpuga, host of Reporters Roundtable. Join me with a panel of journalists and analysts as we discuss Uganda becoming the home of the world's largest refugee camp. This Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com.
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.